Well, good morning, everybody. Today, if you would turn with me to Colossians chapter 4, we're going to be picking up in verse 2. We're going to finish out the letter to the Colossians from Paul. We've been in it for a few weeks. But if you've been here the whole time as we've walked through this letter, you probably have a good idea of what Paul was doing all along. He was building a case. Paul's building a case here. Chapter after chapter, he kept lifting Jesus higher and higher. Jesus, the image of the invisible God. Jesus, the one in whom all the fullness of God dwells in bodily form. Jesus, the head of the church, the firstborn of the dead, the one who reconciles all things to himself. And that's the mountain that Paul has sort of taken us up, and it's been quite the journey as we've been on it with him. But what does he do now as he goes to end this letter to the Colossians and actually to the Laodiceans as well, because the letter will go to both, but to the Colossians? Does he end this with more theology? Does he say, hey, I got more theology to share with you guys? No. What he does is he provides us with a to-do list. And then he starts listing off all these people that are hanging out with him that maybe the others know or that he's sending out. And we're going to dig into that, because if you look at this list, it's really easy to read the end of this letter and go, yeah, it's just a bunch of names. It's just a bunch of names that Paul's listing out here. I'm just going to read it real quick and move on. Or maybe I'm not going to read it at all. But we don't want to do that, because here he's going to end with prayer. He's going to end with some wisdom, and he's going to give us a list of names, and those list of names are going to say something to us as we look at them. You know, it's easy to look at this ending and think, kind of a letdown. He's doing all these theological things as he's walked through, and we get to the end of the letter, and this is what I get. But it's not a letdown. It's really the whole point. The gospel is not just to give you a better philosophy. That's not what it's about. It's to give you a better life, right? A life that's better in prayer, a life of wisdom in a fallen world, a life bound to real people with real names. So let's watch what Paul does here. He takes the doctrine of chapter 1 through 3, and he hands it to us basically in work boots. He's sort of like, here's what you need to be doing. Right? He's going to give us some leads. So look at verse 2 as we start here. Let's read that together. Continue steadfastly in prayer, being watchful in it with thanksgiving. One verse and a ton of stuff packed into that one verse. I honestly think I could teach an entire sermon on just that verse. I'm not going to, but I feel like I could. You know. So Paul says, continue steadfastly in prayer, staying watchful. And not just staying watchful with thanksgiving. Be filled with thanksgiving as you're doing that. But look at what he says here. Continue steadfastly. Continue steadfastly. That's not a word for feeling. He's not saying, feel like doing this. You know, have whatever you feel like at this point. That's a word for discipline. You have to be disciplined to continue steadfastly. If you've ever tried to do any exercise program or diet program, it's not a feeling. You don't wake up and go, well, I kind of feel like not eating a lot today. That's not how I feel. I want to eat a lot. I feel like going to the gym and working out for an hour and a half and being sore for the rest of the day. That's not how I feel. I want to be not that sore. I have to be disciplined, right? Steadfast in the diet, steadfast in the workout, steadfast in my prayer. Have to be disciplined in it. It's the same kind of devotion we see in Acts chapter 2, verse 42, when he said it to the early church. Listen to what he said. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and prayer. They devoted themselves, right? They just didn't say, well, I kind of feel like listening to the apostles' prayer. I mean, the apostles' teaching. Prayer is not something you fit in when you feel spiritual. Let's be honest. If it was only when I felt spiritual, I may not pray a lot. Prayer is something you show up for whether you like it or not. You're like, you know what? I need to pray. I need to be in the Word. Because if we just wait for feelings, guys, let's be honest, we're probably not going to be in the Word a lot. We're probably not going to pray a lot because we're going to get distracted by the world. Other things, our feelings, our emotions. Well, I'm tired today, Lord, so excuse me if I don't spend any time in your Word or spend any time with you in fellowship. Imagine if you told your wife or husband that every day. I just don't feel like it today. How would your marriage be? It wouldn't be really good, would it? It'd be pretty unhealthy, honestly. But what could he also add here? Be watchful. Stay alert, he's saying. Don't just pray, you know, like mindlessly. Don't drift off in the middle of your own prayer life. How many of us have started praying and then ended up making a grocery list or a to-do list? Man, I've been there so many times. In the middle of praying, my mind just drifts away. And I'm like, I don't know how I ended up over here worrying about this. I was in the middle of talking to the Lord. I drifted. And then he says, with thanksgiving. Guys, this is hard sometimes. But this is every time you're praying. Even the desperate prayers. The prayers where you're like, oh, Lord, I really need to hear from you. I really need you to do something, Lord. I need to see you in action, Lord. He's saying even those should be wrapped in gratitude. And I know that's hard. That's hard for everybody. But why should we be doing this? Why should we be praying with thanksgiving? Because we're not praying to a distant God. It's not a distant God that I'm praying to. I'm praying to a God who's reconciled me, who reconciled you to himself through his blood on the cross. So you can pray with thanksgiving, even in the middle of the worst moment in your life. In those hard times, we just need to stop and be like, yeah, this is hard, Lord. But what do I have to be thankful for? Well, first, that you went to the cross. You didn't have to go to the cross for me. You could have let me just die in my sins and be eternally cast out from you and away from you. You didn't owe that to me. You did it because you willingly wanted to do that for me. I can pray and be thankful that he hears my prayers, that he has a desire to have a relationship with me, that he promises me peace, that he's faithful in his promises. All these things I can look at and go, you know, I can be thankful for these things. Lord, this is hard, but I can be thankful. So this is what Paul's telling them. And then he goes into verse 3 and 4. At the same time, pray also for us, that God may open to us a door for the word to declare the mystery of Christ, on account of which I am a prisoner, that I may make it clear which is how I ought to speak. Here we have Paul. He's sitting in Roman prison. He's imprisoned at this point. And what does he ask them for? He says, hey, I want you to pray for me. I want you to be praying for me so that I can be faithful. I would be saying, hey, I want my release. Give me a little bit of comfort. But he asked for an open door for the gospel. Here's Paul in really bad conditions, guys. Understand, a Roman prison is not like going to an American prison. You know, typically, it's dungeon-like. It's dark and dank. He's probably sitting in basically a cloth. He's not all dressed up in his little prison suit. It's going to be cold down there. It's going to be uncomfortable. He's going to be chained directly to a Roman guard. Can you imagine having your leg chained to someone? You have to sit there with them. I feel bad for the Roman guards, honestly. They're going to be with Paul chained up 3 to 4 hours a day, and he's just going to be this hitting them with the gospel all day. I can't imagine how many of them ultimately were like, I'm accepting this Jesus as my Savior, which is pretty awesome. But he's asking the Colossians to pray that more people would hear about Jesus. There was a pastor in China I read about years ago. And when they sent him to jail, they ultimately decided they had two choices with him: to either kill him or let him go. Why? because everyone he was talking to in the prison was coming to a saving knowledge of Jesus Christ, and they didn't want it to spread. They were like, we either got to kill this guy or get him out of here. We can't have him in jail. We don't want him in the jail. They ultimately did let him go. I don't know why they didn't just execute him, but they let him go. Because when he got out, what do you think he did? He started spreading the word even more. So, praise God, they let him out. But that was his concern. This is the same man who told the Philippians that his imprisonment had actually served to advance the gospel message. His focus was totally focused, steadfast on the gospel message, getting out. His is not wasting his chains. He is stewarding them. He's like, I'm here. I'm going to do everything I can while I'm here in these chains. I'm not going to allow it to bring me down. I'm going to do what I have to do while I'm here. He has perfect clarity. Perfect clarity, guys. He's like, I'm going to be steadfast no matter what's happening to me. I'm going to be giving thanksgiving no matter what's happening to me. And it's just a reminder to me that, you know what? I don't have the problems that Paul had. I'm not chained naked beside a guard in a place where they're planning on executing me at some point. I'm able to get up and move around. I got a lot of things to be thankful for. But Paul says, hey, forget about my condition. Let's focus on the gospel. That's all I'm concerned about. But then he also talks about wanting to speak clearly. Like, give me the ability to be clear in my message. Paul, the apostle Paul, is asking for that prayer. I want clarity. If Paul is asking for it, how much more do we need to be asking for it? Lord, I need your clarity. When I talk to somebody, I just need to be clear. I don't need to ramble through it, get to the other side and be lucky. I want to be clear. I find that amazing as I read through the New Testament, even the Old Testament. I see where these great men of faith need the Lord to still help them. Sometimes I put them on a little bit of a pedestal. Oh, there's Paul. There's Peter. There's John. All these great names, you know. And I'm like, you know what? Even they needed the Spirit of the Lord to come to them and say, don't be scared. It's going to be okay. Hey, I need a prayer for clarity because I'm not exactly sure I'm being as clear as I should be. This just reminds me of how my prayers should be focused, right? Look at verses 5 and 6. Walk in wisdom towards outsiders, making the best use of the time. Let your speech always be gracious, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how you ought to answer each person. Let your speech be gracious, seasoned with salt, so that you'll know how to answer each person. What great advice there. He turns from the vertical, talking about our relationship with the heavens, with God, with Jesus. And he says, hey, let's go horizontal here. Let's talk about all the people around you. Let's focus on them. Let's focus on them for a minute. From prayer here, he's talking to, hey, how do I have a conversation? How do I deal with other people? From basically saying, hey, I'm in my prayer closet, so now I'm out in the real world. I'm on the streets. I'm at work. I'm in my house with my family. I'm talking to my neighbors down the street. Walk in wisdom towards outsiders. Basically, who are the outsiders, guys? People that don't know Jesus. People that have rejected Jesus. People that think that Jesus is a myth. They're the outsiders here. But he's saying, hey, maybe it's your neighbor. Maybe it's your coworker. Maybe it's the person at the coffee shop that's standing in front of you and is being rude with the barista. That's the outsider. But he says, be wise around them. He gives them this instruction, you know, making the most of your time. Making the most of your time. Don't waste the time you have with them. If only time you get with your neighbor is 10 seconds a week, don't be wasting it with, so how are you doing today? How's the family? Oh, I saw you got a new car. I've got 10 seconds to save their soul. Now, you're not saving it, obviously, but to deliver the message. Hey, how are you doing today, Bob? Hey, have I ever talked to you about Jesus? Or hey, Bob, how's it going? What do you think of Jesus? Or hey, Bob, when you die, just curious, my wife and I were talking about this. What do you think you're going to go when you die? Heaven? Hell? Do you believe in those? You'd be surprised the number of people that I witnessed to on the street that told me they did not believe in heaven and hell. But when I asked them, well, what do you think happens when you die? Will you go to heaven or hell? Well, I'm going to heaven. I'm like, well, 5 seconds ago, you didn't even believe in it. So how are you getting there? What is this thing? And it opened up a door for me to have a conversation, a real conversation. People like to think about what's going to happen when they die. I mean, it may seem morbid, but people are like, they're curious. I'm curious, right? It's like, okay, what's going to happen when I die? Before I knew Jesus, I'm like, so what's the deal with this death thing? Where do I go? Do I stop existing? Do I step over into karma thing, whatever? Do I reincarnate? What happens? And it opens up this door just to simply say, hey, Bob, what do you think happens when we die? Well, I've been thinking about that. You'd be surprised the number of people that I started that conversation with on the streets of California that wanted to have a conversation. They're like, I want to have this conversation. Because I didn't start with, hey, man, you're going to go to hell if you don't have Jesus. It's the truth. Not necessarily the best way to start a conversation. So give you some clarity, right? Use the time well. Think about, what am I going to say to my neighbor, my coworker, the person in front of me that's throwing a fit? You know, if you pay for someone's coffee, they might say, why are you doing that? Well, let me tell you about, there's a guy I know that asked me to do this for you, that commands me to do this for you. What? There's a guy? Yeah, there's a guy. Can I talk to you about this guy? Sure. You start talking about Jesus. And then he goes on, he says, you know, he says it's redeeming the time. Redeeming is not an accident in this letter, guys. The word here he's using, he's basically saying that there's a scarcity to your time, so you need to redeem it, make the most of it, and there's consequences if you don't. Not necessarily for you, it doesn't mean you're not going to heaven, but this person may be lost. Maybe you're the person that's going to introduce him to Jesus, the Holy Spirit's going to do his work, and an hour from now they're getting hit by a car. I don't know what their fate is. I don't know what my fate is 30 seconds from right this moment. I can assume my fate, but I don't know my fate. So he's saying, hey, there's consequences. Life is short. We don't know what tomorrow brings. Be aware of that. Do something. Have an urgency. As Christians, I see a lot of Christians that have zero urgency in delivering the gospel message. There's zero. They're just like, somebody tell them. Well, maybe next time I see him, I'll tell him about that. I'm like, you don't know that there'll be a next time. There's no guarantee of that. How many of us have got a call before for a young person or a middle-aged or even an older person that seemed like they were doing great? And we get that call that says, hey, I have some really bad news. Your cousin was killed in a car accident. He was 20 years old. You didn't see it coming, but it came. So be urgent, guys. Just every moment you get with a non-believer, seize it for the gospel. I don't care if they dislike you from that moment on. I mean, don't be rude about it, right? Be loving and gracious, but look, I'm more concerned about their eternity than I am about their friendship, about having dinner with them or being invited over to their house. And then he says, season it with salt. What does salt do, guys? It preserves things, right? And it adds flavor. Have you ever gone out and had food that didn't have any salt on it at all? And if you don't like salt, you're not in this category. But if you like salt on any level, you teach, man, that food does not have any flavor. And then you salt it up. And you're like, oh, this is better. I like this, right? So your words towards outsiders should never be bland. So how are you doing today? Come on. Really? That's kind of bland, honestly. How are you doing today? And they should never rot into bitterness or self-righteousness. We got to be careful there. You know, when we go and we talk to someone, we do it in love. We don't do it because we're better than them, because I can tell you, you're not better than them. You're saved. That's the difference. Not better. You're not more self-righteous. In the eyes of God, you're a sinner that has been saved and covered by the blood of his son. He sees you through Jesus' blood. You don't want him seeing you without Jesus' blood. So there's nothing righteous about you. And don't be bitter. Well, that person's always rude when I talk to them about Jesus. Jesus told you the world was going to reject him. And if they're going to do that to me, how much more are they going to do that to you? You know what? I go out, and I hate to say this, I see the Jehovah's Witnesses, and I envy them. They don't care what you think about them. They could care less. They're on a mission. On a mission to deliver the wrong message, but a mission nonetheless. They're not concerned about the world. They're concerned about their made-up God. How much more should we, as followers of Christ, the true and living creator of all things, be less concerned about the world and more concerned about our relationship with God, about those that are lost? I just went to a petting zoo the other day, and they're standing outside the petting park, you know, with all the pet dogs running around, dog park. And I'm like, I literally texted the guys, and I was like, you're not going to believe what's outside the dog park. I was like, I'm standing here, and there's two Jehovah's Witnesses out here, and it's hot. And there they stood, just talking to people as they walked by. And I was like, man, we got to be more like them. We have the right message, the true message. Got to be more like them. So we need to be gracious with people. We need to be directed and intentional with people. But listen, we can't water it down. Sometimes as followers of Christ, we're tempted. Y'all may not be, but there are times that I think we're actually tempted to kind of water it down to make it easier to swallow. Let me just kind of give you the softer version of salvation and hell. Because you'll have people all the time on the street, so you think I'm going to hell? Yes. Short answer, yes. Long answer, let's talk about it. You don't have to go there. You're making the decision to go there. But let me tell you why, and we talk through it. I don't do it like, yeah, man, you're going to hell. I'm not happy about that. I'm terrified for them. So I'm gracious with them. I'm not self-righteous with them. So you see what Paul is doing here? He spent three chapters defending the supremacy of Christ. He said, this is who Christ is.